Welcome to the Marvelous Synergy Podcast, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, Andy Tai, writer of several guides to the MCU, which are also called Marvelous Synergy. This episode will focus on the fourth entry in the MCU, Thor. My guest today is my friend Will Ouyang.
Hi, how are you? How is everyone? Oh, they can't reply anyway, that's fine.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone, but I'm doing well, How are you doing?
Living large in lockdown.
That's the life. Now, Will, I know that you're a Marvel fan. What was the first Marvel film that you saw?
The first Marvel film I saw was Howard the Duck.
Whoa, no way. Not many people I know have seen that film. What did you think about that?
And I liked it. I actually liked it. I was young.
Oh, that's... Well, that's okay. That's a fair excuse.
Yeah, I was very young, and we had it on VHS tape, and I would just play it over and over and over again.
Nice. Well, thank goodness the Marvel films have improved since then.
Yeah, we're very spoilt these days. The next Marvel after that I saw was I think it was the Blade trilogy.
Oh yes, yeah.
It was either that one. Yeah, it had to be that one. Blade trilogy.
Yeah, that was Blade. Yeah, the first Blade film came out next.
Yes, and I remember the either the second or third movie they ended up having a team supporting Blade, and that was the first time I saw Ryan Reynolds. But then also another a British actor called Danny John-Jules, who I remember from Red Dwarf, who's I thought was going to be have a comedic role, but then I watched the movie and went. Not so much. But yeah, Blade was a really, really awesome trilogy of Marvel films.
Nice. All right, on to the main topic of today's podcast. As I said before, it is Thor. It was released on the 6th of May, 2011, directed by Kenneth Branagh. It made over $449 million worldwide, with an estimated budget of $150 million. In comparison, the first Iron Man film made over $585 million worldwide. It had a budget of $140 million. So, financially, the film was a success, but critically, it received a bit of a mixed reception. What are your thoughts on the film? Was it something that it was? Was it one that you liked, didn't like?
I don't think there's a Marvel movie I don't like. but there was a small amount of apprehension because the Iron Man movies, I think they were up to like two by then.
That's right.
So at least the Iron Man franchise on its own was quite strong. So then going into a new character like Thor after the lukewarm reception from Hulk, it's probably them going, oh, I hope this works. So when it did work, it's like, phew, that's a relief. Let's keep going.
Well, a big part of that would be Chris Hemsworth as Thor. You know, he's often cited as one of the strongest aspects of the film. Chris Hemsworth being an Australian actor who up until that point was known for being on Home and Away. And interestingly enough, he got rejected the first time he auditioned, and then he helped out his brother Liam with his audition. But then, yeah, Chris Hemsworth got a second chance, and as we know, he is now our God of Thunder. What parts of his performance really stood out for you?
I think Feige, I think he was still picking out his actors, wasn't he, by then?
Yeah, he's usually involved in selecting the actors they get.
Yeah, I think he made a good choice. Hemsworth, he definitely has the Nordic details, traits of Thor. So the selection, I don't think, was wrong, even though it did take a couple of goes.
I mean, you got to admit, he really looks the part, right? He really put on a lot of muscle to portray a God of Thunder.
Oh, absolutely. He definitely got into shape for the role and definitely looks the part. I think in the early days, I think they were still trying to work out how Thor would behave on like the mannerisms and things. So initially when he was on screen, I noticed he was quite rigid and they were very almost Shakespearean in their dialogue. And then eventually as the movie progresses, you notice it starts to ease up a little bit and it's like they're starting to get into a rhythm. And then towards the end, it's like now you can see he's really settled into the role. And then he's putting himself in. Whereas, like, right at the beginning, it's sort of, he's just yelling because he's being told to yell. And it's like, oh. But, yeah, his character's come a long way since those very, very early parts of the film. So I'm very happy that we've got some Aussie talent in there in the MCU. So yeah, no complaints.
Yeah, I quite like how they didn't take the character too seriously. There were moments of humour throughout the performance, which I think really helped sell the character. It's like when he was in the diner, you know, he goes, ah, this drink, I like it. And then he smashes the cup and goes, another. You know, that moment really stood out for me. And it's one of my favourite parts of the film there.
Yeah, that's a really, like, I think that's one of the standout catchphrases for this film. And pretty much a catchphrase for every time Marvel releases a movie these days. Great!
Another!
Marvel, another! Yes, give me another one. That was a really good scene. Also, the pet store scene where the guy goes, oh, we only have dogs and cats. And he's like, good, give me one large enough to ride.
the whole fish out of water thing was quite interesting. And I quite like the way they handled those aspects of the film. You know, he's been raised in Asgard, which is a very regal place, especially him being a prince, of course. And he comes down to Midgard or Earth. And he's just, you know, you put him in these everyday situations. And not only does he stand out by virtue of his size, you know, he stands out because of his ignorance of...
lack of...
Yeah, basically, you know, he doesn't know how regular humans behave.
Yeah, the lack of social etiquette is very prevalent. Also, not just in those scenes. The very, very beginning where Jane, Natalie Portman's character, hits him with the van, and then she hits him again.
So, she swears she's not doing it intentionally.
Yeah, I saw that. I love those little bits of slapstick. And I thought, they've done it twice. How many times are they going to be able to fit that little running gag in? But I didn't actually see it ever again.
Yeah, I think we only ever see that moment twice. I think twice was the perfect amount of times to play out that particular joke. I think if they had a third time, I don't think it would have necessarily landed as well. What did you actually think of Natalie Portman as Jane? You know, she's an astrophysicist in this film. In the comics, the character was originally a nurse. And I quite liked how they sort of modernized the character a bit, you know, gave her a more central role within the film, gave her character a bit more importance in that sense, you know. They tied into the whole, she's researching these astronomical phenomena. Did you buy her as a scientist? Did you like the relationship she has with Thor?
Well, something your listeners will have to note is that I didn't actually know Jane from comics because I didn't read a lot of the comics for Thor. My first experience of Jane is in this first Thor movie. So I didn't know she wasn't an astrophysicist before this. But having her as the person running the show for her experiments and things, that was a really nice touch because, as you know, in this day and age, we need more women in engineering and science roles. So showing Jane being a very capable person and not like a damsel in distress type character, it was actually really, really good. And it didn't take anything away from the story. So I think having Thor being more of a damsel in distress, that was quite funny because it's like, he's the god of thunder, all the power at his disposal, he's been stripped of it, exiled, and he's the one needing saving, and it's Jane who's coming to save him.
Oh, that's a good point you made there. Yeah, the reversal of the usual tropes there. And how did you feel about the inclusion of Kat Dennings as Darcy and Stellan Skarsgård as Erik Selvig? Did you think they added a lot to the film?
I think it helped in the sense that it helped propel Jane's character. She's the one delegating and telling them they need to do this. Even though Selvig is also a doctor, he was a bit negative, like, from the beginning. He's like, oh, we shouldn't do this, we should do this and that. And she's like, no, I need to follow this through. I need to find these phenomena. And it helped establish Jane as being a strong scientist that will see things through and is confident with seeing things through. Mm. Darcy, I don't think they gave her enough of a... She seemed like the comedy insert, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, the moments they, as you, I think you were trying to point out, she doesn't have a big role, but when they did give her a line, so it's one of the best in the film, right? They really stood out, like how she can't pronounce Mjolnir properly. She's like, Mjolnir? I always laugh whenever I see that moment. And then she's very, you know.
Mjolnir, and an enemy.
She's very proud of the fact that she tasered Thor as well.
She's sort of the common sense character when everything seems out of whack, and I think she's supposed to bring everything back down to reality.
Mm.
In hindsight, looking back, and then also having watched WandaVision and Darcy's role in WandaVision, it would have been nice to see a bit more of her intelligence in the original Thor, like even just for a scene or two, just to say she's not like a temp work experience kid who doesn't know anything. First day of the job sort of thing. She's there because she knows stuff and she's helping out Jane.
Yeah, I think it would have added a bit more to her character. I think you're right there.
Because, you know, as you know, WandaVision, you've seen it. They introduce her as straight away as an expert, whereas previously all the experience of Darcy prior to that was Thor. All of a sudden it's like, okay, she knows all this stuff all of a sudden. And where did this come from? We didn't see any of this in the previous scenes we've seen her in.
Oh, she was studying in between the Dark World and WandaVision. That's all she's been doing.
Oh, okay. that was my response, initial reaction to the WandaVision when seeing Darcy. It's like, oh, cool, she knows stuff. Whereas it's like, I didn't see that before. I was expecting the taser to come back out at some point, but
that would have been cool.
Just, you know, on her 24/7, just a taser.
Just bring it back to Thor momentarily. Did you notice that they dyed his eyebrows blonde in this film, or really bright blonde? Well, that was an odd choice, which I'm glad they don't continue with the other films. They really stick out, and you know he's got a really great costume. It's just that those eyebrows.
You know, I didn't notice that.
You should go back again, and once you see them, you won't be able to forget them because they. I don't know, they just really stick out and just don't suit the character at all. It's a very odd choice, that one.
I knew something was off, but I wasn't sure what it was, and now that you've mentioned it...
Yeah, it's the eyebrows.
It's sort of... The penny drops. Have you ever had a God of Thunder that wasn't quite right? Yeah. No, blonde eyebrows. I didn't spot that before. That's going to be... I'm not going to be able to unsee that now, thanks.
No, that's a thing. That's a thing. And it's only in this first film.
Oh, that makes it really weird. I thought the scene where he's walking up to Odin at the very beginning of the movie to say, you know, here's my coronation day. I get to be declared king. And then he winks at his mother. And I'm like, what's going on? I mean, sure, it's Rene Russo, but it's his mother.
I love the disapproving look she gives him in return.
Yeah.
I think he was just being, you know, a bit cheeky. That's still very much the arrogant Thor we see at the beginning of the film. He hasn't had his experiences on Midgard yet to mellow him out.
I just want to bring up the duopoly of Thor and Loki throughout the whole film.
Yeah, I mean, Loki is definitely a standout character in the film, played by Tom Hiddleston. Did you know he actually auditioned to play Thor first?
I did. I have actually watched a couple of interviews of Tom Hiddleston. And
Have you seen the screen test?
No, I haven't seen the screen test. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Yeah, look at it. It is interesting. Like, you know, props to Hiddleston. He does give it his all. You know, he did try to put on some muscle, not as much as Hemsworth, and... You know, he has a hammer and he's swinging it around and all that, but you don't buy him as the God of Thunder. he was definitely a much, much better fit for Loki.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at old Nordic mythology, Thor was more Hemsworth looking, like blonde and very, very large, broad, masculine features.
Rugged.
Yeah, whereas Hiddleston's a lot more slender, so the Loki role being mischievous and quick... And not leaning on his muscles and strength to win is very much more appropriate for the look and feel of Hiddleston as Loki.
Quite like how he's a tragic character as well. He's not your typical villain.
Yeah, it's a competition between brothers of whoever wins gets everything and the other one sort of doesn't.
And that's a, yeah, you can very much understand why he does what he does, you know? It's all to win Odin's love.
And the journeys that each of them take throughout the movie, they're sort of very polar opposite, almost mirror reflections of each other as the movie progresses. Like, you know, Thor getting exiled to Earth. And him being at rock bottom, and then while he's at rock bottom, Loki's at the other end. He's king.
He's rising up.
And legally, I think, as well. Like, Odin collapses, and well, we're not spoiling the movie for anyone, right? It's been out for 10 years. They can
People should have seen the film before listening to this episode.
10 years, people. You had to. So, spoiler warning. Yeah, with Odin collapsing in the vault and Thor being exiled, then yeah, next in line is Loki. So, fair and square in that sense, he got the throne.
Yeah, in that sense, fair and square. But then, you know, he's got these asterisks next to it. You know, it's like I'll tell Thor he's completely banished and he can't return. And there's a few cheeky things here
Oh, and I'll just tell him that his dad is actually dead, and instead of he just needed to get put in the battery charger, and
I've never heard Odin's sleep being described that way before. But essentially, right. It's essentially right.
it's yeah. Well, basically that's it. He runs out of energy. He collapses, and they put him back in the thing. And there's glowing energy around him. So I figured he's being put back in the charger.
I mean, speaking of Odin, I quite liked how they got such a renowned actor as Sir Anthony Hopkins to play the role. He adds a nice gravitas to the character, even though Odin's not the most morally right, shall we say. It's a bit you know, the things he does to his kids there. But no, I you know, he lends a credibility to it all, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think Sir Anthony Hopkins, sorry, him being selected as being Odin at that point in time for Odin's life was perfect casting, because Anthony Hopkins, he carries it very, very well. Like, he's serious and grandiose with his dialogue and overtones, but there's also a vulnerability, because this is not Odin at his peak. This is Odin at the towards the end of his reign. So that balance between having absolute power and vulnerability, he just carried that and nailed it.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
I mean, was it the way Odin talks is very soft, actually. It seemed quite soft initially, co compared to, you know, the wartime Odin in the flashbacks. And that's because I think it shows that the time between the wartime Odin and peacetime Odin, he's mellowed, and he's grown wiser as well. Having had to like learn and pay for his war conquering days. And yeah, that's I don't know how they actually managed to do it really, really well. He can deliver it, those emotions, just through his very small dialogue. And yeah, it's, as I said before, perfect casting.
Another aspect I liked about this film is how they handled the whole mythology of Thor. You know, I especially liked how, in terms of adapting the source material, they left out some of the more complicated bits, shall we say. So in the comics, when Thor is banished to Earth, he's actually, you know, a mortal named Don Blake, you know, who doesn't know he's Thor until he goes into a cave and finds a stick, and when he taps it onto the ground, he transforms into the God of Thunder. I'm glad that they left that aspect of the character for the comics, but they did hint at it. You know, we see the name Don Blake as a name tag on the shirt Jane gives Thor to wear. And the fact that it also furthers the MCU, you know, that you do see Agent Coulson and S.H.I.E.L.D. again, get that tease of Hawkeye. Were these things exciting to you as well? Did they distract for you, or do you think there wasn't just enough of a balance there?
I didn't think it distracted at all. I felt they were nice little Easter eggs. Introducing Hawkeye and Coulson was also really cool, like in hindsight, because Hawkeye got a very, very small role in this movie, but the potential that they have for him in this movie is like, hang on, he's not just like one of the soldiers that run around that does what Coulson wants. He's actually given a bit more free rein compared to the other guy, so he must be a bit more important and a bit more special, and he's shooting a bow and arrow from a swaying crane in the middle of a stormy night when it's like, okay, he's got more than what they're letting on. And then they just tuck him away. And then you see and hear more of Coulson. And for those who haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or any of the other movies with Coulson in it, he is exactly the same. He acts exactly the same in the other movies and the TV series. So his introduction from this movie also, I think, was really, really good. Because he's sort of very deadpan, but then there's glimpses of humor in his character. It's like he's the nerdy, geeky, daggy dad that watches over the kids that are running about, which are the Avengers.
I quite like Coulson's role in this film. I didn't mind Hawkeye's appearance. Like, I just kind of wish that they gave Hawkeye a bit more to do. Like, as introductions go, this was a bit of a... Yeah, look, I know they're teasing the character and all, but you could have met him again as an agent on the ground or something, talking to Coulson, that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe it's just me and the fact that when you look at the MCU, or the Infinity Saga more specifically, right? He's not a character that really stands out. You get his backstory in Age of Ultron, and that's about it, really. They haven't really used the character to his full potential yet.
Oh, fully agree. Adding to that, the end fight scene against Guardian or something?
The Destroyer.
Like, he was assigned to look after the hammer and, like, be in that general vicinity while this was going on. But he never made an appearance in that final fight scene. And I thought, that would actually have been good to have him sniping.
Firing arrows at it.
Yeah, like, sniping from a rooftop and seeing if he could do any damage.
Yeah, I think it would have just made the character just a bit more richer in that sense, you know? You get to...
Yeah, we had random agents turn up in cars and get blown away, basically.
Well, they got blown up. I think that's why they used random agents there.
Yeah, but where was Hawkeye in all this? Like, surely he was around.
That's it, right?
And, yeah, oh well. But that's... It's the... Oh, I would have done this differently in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things that I'm not a huge fan about in this film, I kind of feel that Thor's lesson, you know, him learning humility, and it's a very short, he learns it very quickly. He's only on Earth for like a couple of days or so. I don't feel as though that's enough time to really undo many, many years of this, you know, egotistical, brash mindset that he has at the beginning of the film.
True. I mean, we don't know how many years either, because these are Asgardians. They don't age the way we do. It could have been like 1,000 years he was like that, and then 2 days and he's changed.
Yeah. Like, I can understand, you know, him being around humans and Jane's, you know, Jane being patient with him and that sort of thing. But yeah, it just doesn't sell for me. I'm not sold on the idea of him changing his ways so quickly.
On the other hand, he also hasn't experienced that level of... It didn't seem like he experienced that level of trauma before.
That's a good point.
You know, Odin exiling him, stripping him of all his powers. Not just go to your room, go to this planet with nothing.
That's the Asgardian way of doing things, is sending you to another planet instead of your room.
Go to your planet and stay there. I don't think Thor actually had... experienced that level of helplessness before. So I think that vulnerability was what Odin wanted him to experience in order to change his mindset. I don't think it would have happened that quickly. I agree, 2 days is probably not a long time, but being helpless and then searching for a solution, I think, did in a sense help. Especially with Odin sending Mjolnir, the hammer, down with him with a condition. So, for the listeners at home who aren't into MCU lore, it's whoever is deemed worthy of ruling Asgard can wield the hammer. Is that right?
Not so much ruling Asgard, just worthy. I believe the phrase is, whoever holds his hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor.
Yeah. So him not being able to lift the hammer would have also been another part of his hitting rock bottom and going, I'm no longer worthy. What have I done? What can I do to redeem myself, sort of thing.
Last thing I wanted to mention was the fact that the world premiere of Thor was actually held in Sydney. Not too sure if you knew that, Will.
No.
Yeah, so it was held on the 17th of April 2011 at Event Cinemas George Street, and I got to be in attendance. Now, when I say that, I didn't mean walk the red carpet or anything like that. I was one of the public. I was amongst the crowds there waiting for the stars to walk the red carpet. I was there with my friend Billy Lee, so shout out to her, who helped me take some photographs. But it was quite good. I mean, I was very fortunate enough to get pictures with Tom Hiddleston, Jamie Alexander, and of course, Chris Hemsworth. And given how big they are now, right, the fact that I had somewhat easy access to them, I'm very, very fortunate in that regards. Well, that's all we've got time for today's episode. Thank you very much, Will, for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Please like or follow the Marvelous Synergy Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr pages, and subscribe to this podcast to hear future episodes. If you want to learn more about the MCU, you can find my guides to the films on Amazon. And with that, I'll catch you later. See you next time.